good evening, good evening. Yeah, back weekly buzz, as we said we would. Imagine we're actually doing something that we said we would, which is a very rare event at all. We're in a quick pod tonight, given that there was no matches at the weekend. There's really only a couple of injuries to talk about. And more or less, we want to have a look at what we expect to happen come the end of the season with transfers and stuff, because I'd say we'd be taking a very long break over the summer and possibly forever. So in tonight, we've got a bit of an old crew and an old feel about it tonight. We've got Steve Daly and we have Dave Thomas, and that's about it. So we're going to crack on, and I don't know where I'm going to cut this in, but I'll cut it in.
I love it, I love it.
Right.
Hashtag here to help.
Hashtag.
Sunglasses.
Okay, lads, so before we get started, just a recommendation for anyone listening to the pod. If you're listening to it on Acast, turn it down to half speed and you'll definitely get an hour of pleasure fest for the next hour, because we're only doing a half an hour, so that's why you need to turn it down to half speed.
Basically going to sound like this, where we all talk to each other like that and all.
Sorry, I might be flashbacks to the WhatsApp. Just surely doing my voice.
All right. So there hasn't been much happening because there was no matches with the international break. But two things have come out of it in the last couple of days. Seamus Coleman, obviously a big player for Everton, smashes his leg all over the shop.
Hey, the Welsh took care of that.
That's a bit harsh. You wouldn't want to wish anything bad on an Everton player at all. Now, is that true, Dave? No.
Yeah.
I wish a bad thing on all the Irish players.
But the only other.
It's nothing to do with him being from Everton.
Just Irish.
Irish. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. And then the other thing was, I only saw it today, Lallana's out for a month.
Yeah.
With a thigh injury, which is obviously has a bigger impact.
Which he picked up in an absolutely meaningless friendly that he was played in.
Yeah.
Was that a friendly they were playing in?
Yeah, it was a friendly match.
I thought he played at the weekend.
No, he played two games, didn't he?
He played the Lithuania match against the Postman.
Oh, did he play? Yeah, sorry.
Lithuania was a qualifier, but the first game against
Germany. So what I said, a meaningless friendly.
Yeah, exactly.
They've given England that group specifically because they knew Gareth Southgate was getting the job.
Yeah.
And they didn't want a good manager going into the England job.
Yeah.
So they knew that Southgate,
Navigate them through that group, and then they would fail miserably in the group stage.
While giving them another 4-year contract to take them through to the next World Cup.
While their fans all get battered.
Behind Jermaine Defoe.
Yeah.
Jermaine Defoe is there.
Jermaine Defoe. Fascinating.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's fascinating.
So, yeah, Lallana's out.
Lallana's out. That's a pain in the arse, to be honest with you.
So, let me tell you what's going to happen now. Everyone is going to clamour for Coutinho to be dropped into the midfield.
Yeah.
Right? And he's not, because Klopp has never, ever, ever played him there. Mm-hmm. And he'll play. When?
When Lallana was out in December, before he got injured.
No, he played Wijnaldum, Kahn and Henderson.
Coutinho's definitely played in there.
Henderson got injured.
I didn't think Coutinho had played there since Rodgers was there.
Yeah, no, I'm open to correction, but I think before Christmas he played in that position, before he then got
injured.
Okay,
so he's played in there once.
Yeah, yeah, no, but up till then Lallana had been...
Because if Henderson's fit, you'd imagine he'll come back in, right?
Yeah.
Which looks like he's going to be fit.
Yeah.
Derby match.
Well, they're talking about him being on the bench, but... Henderson's the sort of fella that if he's sort of 80% there, you can probably throw him in. And you'll get a good 70 minutes out of him, and we'll be 3-0 up by then.
I mean, I'd be almost tempted, right, to leave Kahn at the base of the midfield and throw Henderson further forward.
Yeah. So would I.
Play Henderson while Lallana's been playing.
Yeah, and it might be the better option because Chan has settled there and him and Wijnaldum have been... They've had some good games there.
Because he played, not exactly there, but he kind of played there under Rodgers, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Gerrard behind him there with Coutinho in the midfield, those three. And then, obviously, they had a better forward line. But I don't like the idea of Henderson, Kahn and Wijnaldum in the midfield against Everton.
I know
Kahn and Wijnaldum as the two forward.
Oh, yeah, with Henderson behind it. Yeah, yeah, I know just
Henderson. I was watching Germany a second. Geez, Chan's playing well here, isn't he? Then I realise it was Kadira.
That's Sammy Chan is some player, isn't he?
He's thinned out there.
Yeah.
Flying around.
He's so tall. I don't know what
his hair is longer.
But so he had a great performance. Great game. Since the final Fantasy 14.
Because if you bring Coutinho back, who are you putting in the front three then?
Ben Woodburn. Throw him in. Just do it.
Play him where Lallana was then.
I don't know.
I don't think he's going to play in that front three.
I don't know what he is.
But Coutinho hasn't had a good game in that front three since he came back.
Yeah,
so perhaps putting him into the midfield and allowing him to be on the ball a little bit more rather than just having to pick it up in yeah. pockets of the game. It might be the way to.
But are we then a little bit lightweight in this game, given Everton's traditional mentality, no matter who the manager is,
kick them up in the air,
is just to spend their time trying to kick Liverpool off the pitch?
Yeah, we probably are. But you know what? Coutinho could be the ideal man to put them down to 10 men in a game like this, playing in that position, because you're going to have them. He's going to be able to pick up pockets of space 10 yards out from the edge of the box. And that's where they will either not want to foul him, or if they do, leave themselves open to cards and stuff like that.
Who's their midfield? Is it Barry, McCarthy, and who's the guy they signed?
It's Gay, isn't it?
Yeah,
Barry, the young lad. McCarthy hasn't been getting in,
Simon Davies?
No.
Tom.
Stephen Davies?
Tom something.
Yes.
Tom Davies.
It could be Tom. I don't know what his surname is.
Something Davies.
Is it Tom Davis?
It is, yeah. He's generic Davies player that comes out every year, a couple of years in midfield.
They all have curly hair as well.
Yeah.
English player called
and
Davies.
And then your man, is Ross Barkley still there?
Yeah.
He hasn't signed.
He's still there. Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's been their best player, I think, apart from Lukaku.
Your man has been getting good reviews in the middle of the game.
Interesting, for holding the midfield or whatever. They've got their shit together since we played them last, and they've done well because they've got the points on the board.
And they do a win.
Oh, no, they are a win.
This could be the win.
I'm with you on this, right?
Because it's like City, right? We keep beating them, and it's all that does is bring the hammer in closer to when it's going to happen.
Eventually it's happening,
yeah.
And this is the one time we don't want it to happen.
No, every time is the one time.
I know what you're saying. They're so close to us that, and we so badly need the 3 points this weekend that now is not the time.
It's also just the whole space of where we are at this moment in time. Right, is that it's so condensed at the top.
Yeah,
and it's going to feel like that if we drop any points from here on in, because this is probably our last.
It feels massive. It feels like 6 points. Yeah. Nearly, you're giving it away.
Because United have these games in hand, Arsenal have games in hand, and you're just sitting there waiting for them to clock up the
points. Yeah, you need to be picking up your points and hoping that they drop points in their games. Because they've all to play. Like, literally that other top five have a huge amount of games against each
City
other.
Because City and United is the game in hand. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And then United still have Spurs,
Arsenal,
and Chelsea.
They've
got Chelsea next weekend.
Yeah.
Or this weekend.
Is it this weekend?
I think it's either Arsenal or Chelsea or United or Chelsea. I can't remember. It's one of the two anyway. And
I think it could be Arsenal Chelsea this weekend.
Maybe,
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So United have a tough run. But I think, I have no idea. And the thing is about the Everton game is on paper our last tough
big
game.
Yeah.
I mean, we have Southampton, I think, is the other one you'd be a little worried about. But no one else. We'll hammer Everton, and then whoever we've got next,
we've got Stoke in there. We've got West Brom in there.
Oh yeah,
we've got West Ham away in there.
Yeah,
like when you look at them.
Oh no, they're not easy games. But they
are games that you know
we should be winning.
Yeah. But when the pressure comes on back end of the season, you're thinking to yourself, "Oh, these are the type of ones that."
Well, here's the question: Is it the way the teams have played, or is it pressure that has caused us to falter against? Is it pressure that has caused us to excel in the big games? The pressure of it, is that what gets us up? So if we go into games against West Ham away, but it's actually a more highly pressured game than if it was in the middle of October, do we up our level? Do we see that from us? Do we see our top end game
I think so.
Or do we just bottle it as we have all
more
season?
More and more teams are going to have more to play for. Okay, yeah. You know, West Brom and Stoke maybe not, but if you're playing teams who are in a relegation battle, they're going to come and play.
Yeah,
because they have to. They have to come and try and get. And I think that suits us. I do think of all the players we could afford to lose, Lallana and Firmino are probably the two that make that system work the way it works. I know you're not Firmino's biggest fan, but he is critical to the way Klopp plays. Even Mane. Well, Mane is another one, but for me, it's like Lallana. Is the most important player, I think, in Klopp's system.
You know what? Yeah, listen, I've been given out about Firmino ever before. It was a big public thing that people
ever
were gone.
Before.
Well, what I mean is,
I tell you, the standards of diction on this podcast have gone way downhill since I was last year. Ever before.
Yeah.
That's not a phrase.
Of course it is.
It is.
Ever before.
Well, before ever, yeah.
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 Okay. So basically, you say sixth. Don't come at me.
What do I say?
You say sixth.
Sixth.
Yeah.
That's the word.
No, it's not. We've had this conversation before. It's an X, not a K. S-I-X-T-H.
So you say
sixth.
Sixth. That's what I say.
No, sixth.
Sixth.
That's what I'm
saying. It's the same thing. No, because you don't say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sick. You say 6. But then you drop this at the end when you're putting it in TH. You go 6th, like half of England.
Do I?
Yeah. Half of Britain do it. 6th.
I think it's
not the half that wants to stay in the EU.
No, they know how to say 6th.
Yeah. The Scottish and the Northern Irish know how to say it.
Yeah, they learned.
Welsh and the English have a big problem.
Let's get back to Firmino. My big problem with him earlier on in the season was how much he was giving away the ball. And no matter what stats show you, I watched matches, I was in WhatsApp with you, and I would literally count them up and say, there's 11 times in the game when an easy pass was on, and he's just giving away. Yeah, and then claim credit, and then give out when there's no credit given to me for them.
Stats I invented in my head.
Where's the credit for my making up stats? That was my problem with him. But now what's happened is it's become the usual Liverpool fan thing whereby you have to be in a camp. You're either pro Firmino or you're anti Firmino. And if you're pro him, you find everything that he's first at, like running around and tackling, which are fucking, you know.
I love the fact that people say
he defends so well. He defends so well from the front. Well, maybe he does, but we still have a shit defence, so it doesn't really fucking matter, does it? I prefer a striker that was sticking it in the fucking net and worry about the shit defence
afterwards.
Maybe
he should go back and teach our defenders how to defend.
Maybe he should
play centre-half.
Yeah. By the way, we forgot about Schneiderlin when we were talking about
him. Well, he's injured as well.
Is he injured?
Yeah.
Well, he's been in there and Barkley has been getting in.
Who kicked him?
Oh, he's French. Just
probably another Welsh guy, was it?
Probably with a bit of luck, but Gareth, yeah, the big issue for me is with Firmino. Yes, he suits a system, but the truth is he's not scoring nearly enough. And I know he scored 2 games ago, but I don't give a shit. He has a 1-in-3 ratio as our top striker. When we've had strikers like Sturridge, like Suarez, like Torres, whoever else, that were probably a 1-in.
Well, Suarez had a 2-in-1.
Yeah, but we've always had a striker that's in around a 1-in-1.2, 1.4.
But I think Suarez's first season and a half, he was similar to Firmino.
He wasn't 1-in-3.
He scored 12 goals in his first full season.
But the only thing is, Suarez looked like he was going to score more goals because he kept hitting the post.
Kept hitting the post. Yeah. The Dagnish. Yeah. He scored 12 goals.
And he hit the post 42 times. Adams.
And I think every one of us on this pod were saying, if he just stopped hitting the post instead of putting it in the net.
But Firmino never ever looked like a natural finisher.
No, I don't think he is. And I think that if you were looking at taking the names out of it, if you were saying who would you upgrade, you'd upgrade that position and move him probably to where
I wouldn't move him, because he's been poison when he was out left. He was worse than I admit that he's played well when up front, even though he's not scored. He's had good games up there. When he was out on the left while Coutinho was injured, he was cat piss. That's you know what I mean. I couldn't watch.
I think it's more complicated than that. But I do see the point that you want someone that's a bit more clinical. But then if you get a 20 goal a season striker, but the team overall scores less, which Firmino does contribute a lot to that, we're actually down. So him individually, I don't care as much about. It's whether he's actually having a positive impact on the rest of the team.
Well, can I bring something in here, right? Because I think it's something it's worth debating because it's around this issue, right? If Firmino is the striker, if Firmino is the player, the problem is Liverpool built a team around Suarez, right?
Yeah.
And they built the team to get the best out of Suarez. Mm. Right? Suarez is obviously a genius and fucking brings that team on again. But the one thing Rodgers did do was set up that whole team to get the best as quickly as possible out of Suarez, whether it was either Gerrard's long prone passes from when he was sitting at the bottom of midfield, or having Sturridge there to have another foil to drag away more players to create space and continue to tread balls through to Suarez. But it was all about setting up around Suarez. I still look at Klopp's team and I say, right, great, we have a system, we have a format and a style of play, right? But who's he building the team around?
No one.
This is my thing, right? So if you're going to say to you, right, so we're saying that, forget the name, going to your point, forget the names, right? If you were saying that this system revolves around a non-traditional centre-forward, someone who's going to drop out and play deep and maybe then have two wide forwards who are almost other prongs that come in and fill in the central position, then that's the position that you build your side around. So in my mind, Klopp has either got to make a decision and say, well, I'm going to build it around Firmino and have Mane, who's good enough, obviously on the right-hand side, but it's that left-hand side that needs seriously upgrading, that needs either even a Heung-min Son at Spurs who's going to score 15, 16 goals a season, cutting in from left and scoring there. And Firmino, for all his lack of goals, he's still going to get 1-in-3. So between my 3 strikers that are going to play in that position, I'm going to get the equivalent of 45 goals, which would be 20 and 25 if you had 2 central strikers, let's say.
And I think, to be fair, he's trying to kind of do that. And I think where I challenge it a little bit is I think it's Coutinho's drop off, which is the issue, not Firmino.
But Coutinho was out for so long. But and sorry, Firmino
what I mean is
off.
That Coutinho role, right? Whoever's playing on that left hand side, so it was Origi or it was Sturridge or it was Lallana or whatever. So whoever's playing there, I think if you extrapolate out what Coutinho was scoring, the rate that he was scoring to the games that he missed, I actually think we'd be much further up the table. So I think it's Coutinho, that drop off, which has had a bigger impact than Firmino's drop off, because he still scored 11 goals.
Yeah, I don't have figures on this, but no. Like, I suppose we're talking, like, and even people on Twitter came back, because I had a little moan about Firmino the other day, or I had a moan about that stat I saw with them all, the number one. And people came back and said, yeah, but we're the highest scoring team in the league. And I'm like, well, listen, it's April now. Where are we? And I could be wrong on this, but where are we since the 1st of January? Even the 1st of December. Where are we from the 1st of December, if you're to look at all the games that teams have scored in since then? We had a blistering start to the season where we were smashing goals past teams for the first 3 months. And in November, that stopped. And it hasn't really, apart from the odd game, it hasn't started again. So for all our blistering attack and oh, he adds so much to the team, the whole unit as a whole has changed the way it's been dismantling teams.
Isn't that the case for every team throughout the season? You're never going to be at the same level for the whole season.
No, of course not.
Chelsea have gone in the other way, right? Their first 3 months, they were a little dodgy, and suddenly they click into it and now they look unstoppable.
Yeah.
You know,
and even their dodgy spell, the things that people forget about the dodgy spell was, like, I think they had two losses in the run of their first 15 games and then won 15
so
in
take
a row.
Chelsea out of it for a minute, right? Every team has kind of gone through that, right? Which is, like, Spurs now, I think, are on a 11-game winning streak, or 10 games in a row, whatever they've won.
You know, they haven't lost in the league since October or something.
But they were, you know, they've had wobbles themselves, and they haven't always looked, they've been lucky to get points. So I think that, I just don't think we were ever going to sustain that.
No, and I'm not expecting us to sustain it, but what I'm saying is, a lot of the excuses around Firmino or our attack at the moment being made are based on information that's 5 months old. And what I mean by that is, nothing is being said about addressing the issues we've had for the last 4 months or 5 months since late November. And that's where we've struggled as a squad, as a team, as a club, whatever way you want to put it, that we haven't been able to change it up. We haven't been able to say, okay, Coutinho's injured, Firmino's struggling, we bring in Sturridge, we bring in Origi, or a named player. It doesn't have to be those players, because hopefully it won't be them next season. Yeah. I'm hoping there will be a freshening up of it. But for me, the obvious thing is to upgrade. Like, it's always been my call. You
there's
always
no one
upgrade.
In that team that we can't upgrade.
Exactly, no exactly. One. And if anybody thinks there's a player in that it's team nonsense. That's non-upgradable.
And see, what happens is, and this is the challenge of being a football fan sometimes, is you obviously support a player, or you become attached to players, or you think they're better than they are, or because you have to, because you want your team to win. So, and then what happens is you feel like, you have to take it to that an illogical conclusion, which is, well, we can't do better. Mm. But there's nobody we have that we can't do better.
Absolutely. And that's something that I said back in August time. I said, I'm not going to have players that I want in the team this season.
Yeah.
I just want to enjoy watching the team. Yeah. And I genuinely have become way less emotionally attached with the club, with anything else in terms of this season. It's been far more about just sitting down, watching the game, enjoying it. And as soon as the final whistle goes, I genuinely have no major feeling about what's just happened. I've enjoyed 90 minutes or 100 minutes of loads entertainment. Of and that's it. You know what I mean? I just enjoy that and that's that. So for me, it isn't a case of wanting one player in or having I'm in camp fucking Lovren or I'm in camp Matip or whatever it might be, you know?
Well, okay, so let's
I'm just on that point, I'm exactly the same. And I think that, not to be fair, that's come through in some of the pods as well. It's like, because it's not enjoyable when you feel so entrenched in your opinion that you spend all your time as a fan arguing your opinion.
Or wanting to see somebody fuck up on your own team. Yeah. Wanting to see them fuck up just so you can tell someone else on Twitter how shit one of your own players is.
Or so for me, it's all been about Klopp. I'm behind Klopp. Whatever he decides to do, I don't give a shit. Like, when he brought Mignolet back in, I hate Mignolet. But I'm like, okay, there we go. That's what he's going to do.
Yeah. You know, and the Karius thing has died down. Sorry, Phil, I know you want us to move on.
No, it's not like, listen, we can talk about that all evening because there's nothing else to talk about. but no, and it leads on. So, and it does lead nicely into the next bit, the defence. Because we are going to talk about somebody who divides opinion still, which is fucking ridiculous at this stage, right? Because he is what he is. And that's, who do we start the centre back? Like, there can't be any rational minded fucking Liverpool fan out there that doesn't want Lovren to start in the derby?
No, there's no rational mind out
there. There's tons of them out there. But to anybody that picks Clavin over Lovren is just doing it because they have
a thing about Lovren.
A thing about Lovren.
Okay, now, when they say Lovren, how many microseconds does it take them to say, but we should still have Sacco?
Yeah, listen, you know what? And I was looking at, and I'm actually happy for Sacco and I'm happy for the club. As much as I said he should go when he went because he'd done whatever he'd done, I'm happy to see him playing football and doing well because, number one, it's good for him. It's good to see good players at a club. It's no point in him playing for the under-23s or languishing, not training with our players or anything like that. So he's at Crystal Palace. He's getting games. People are putting everything that Crystal Palace do now down to the fact that Sacco's in the team rather than the fact that Sam Allardyce is a master at not getting teams relegated. But from all of that, he's playing football and our asset is growing in value. So in the summer, we'll get the money for him that
and
we
also,
want.
And also, so two things on that. I agree with you completely. One, Sacco coming into the team has coincided with Allardyce changing the way they play.
Yeah.
Because when he first came in, they never won a game and he was trying to play attacking football. And then they got hammered 4-0 by Sunderland. And after that, which just so happened to be in January, he had a meeting with his team and he went, right, we've tried it your way, we're doing it fucking my way now.
Yeah.
And he's gone back to defence first, long balls.
We're doing it the exact way I've saved every team I've ever managed from being relegated.
I've given you all the rope you wanted.
Yeah.
You've hung yourselves repeatedly.
Yeah. Now we do the fat Sam way.
And then the second thing is as well, people talk about the Sacco thing as if it's a zero-sum game, right? Mm. That if you bring him in, there is only upside, as in we will concede less goals. There is only a positive, you know, I saw people I actually respect saying, when is Klopp going to get over this pride versus performance, da da da. But if you look at it at a bigger level, if you bring Sacco back, if Klopp folds and brings Sacco back in, right? What happens the next time he has to, like, be tough or lay down the law with someone that the fans don't fucking love?
Mm.
You know, suddenly then players think, well, he's all talk, this guy.
Yeah, it's easy to revolt.
And suddenly then players go from giving him 110% to give him 90% I'll get away with it. He brought Sacco back. So it's not a zero-sum game. You've got to say the manager and, you know, Ferguson, if you read his books and you can say what you like about the prick, right? But he fucked off a lot of players they crossed that line, and it's not that he was
didn't care who they were.
Didn't care.
It's not that he didn't even feel they could do a job for the team anymore. They crossed his path. Yeah. They challenged his authority, and they were gone.
He sold Beckham because he thought Beckham was distracted. He sold Yapstam because of a rumour about something. You know, and I'm sure there's more that have gone on in the background. Look at what he did to Roy Keane, all these players. And to argue that we should, and we've done Sacco to death, but you can't separate you can try and separate his ability as a player and say, okay, if we had that player, let's say that player wasn't Sacco, and we signed a player that was exactly the same, you can make that argument we'd be better. But he isn't. He's that player that took drugs, that didn't tell the club about it, that was then, after being warned about his conduct, and I'm sure Klopp at some level is like, you fucked up my chance to win the Europa League because we might have won it if you were there. He then takes the piss while he's on training, and you can love the guy, but Klopp can't let that.
And it's not the first time. No. People have blanked the storming out of the ground before the last derby. When Rodgers dropped him.
Yeah. No, listen, you know, he's a temperamental bloke he's a very, very good defender. I wouldn't say he's a great defender, but, you know, he had potential.
Yeah, temperament issues at PSG.
Yeah.
But I mean, listen, again, we're ignoring.
This is the thing. It's the camp Sacco, camp Lovren, right? You're looking at the derby at the weekend and we're saying, who have we got to pick from? We've got a choice of Clavin, Lucas, Lovren, Matip. And Joe Gomez.
Yeah.
Right? Now, two of them aren't choices. One doesn't exist, which means we've only got two centre-backs at the club, essentially.
Yeah.
And the biggest criticism here...
It's not like Clavin has come in and performed amazingly.
In fact, he's been a fault, I think, for every goal we've...
He's definitely got... He got out way lightly in the last game with a couple of crazy... Yeah. Slide tackles that just he didn't connect with anybody on, and the ball just gave chances away.
But we're looking at a defence. The goals that we're conceding seem to come down the side Milner's on, right?
Milner and Clavin together is just a fucking disaster. Right? Yeah. You can't have those two old men down once. I mean, Guardiola killed us down that.
Just went pace and get the ball in as quickly as possible. Yeah. Don't give them a chance to recover.
To get up close to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Koeman was going to look at the same and he's going to say to Lukaku, pull out to the right. That's where you're going to win.
You get in that channel. You get in that channel between the centre half and the
back. Or he's going to say, look, fake to go into to Matip, then cut back across Clavin. And we'll get the ball into you as quickly as possible. Yeah. Morales, whip that ball in. Don't even take a touch. As soon as the ball comes to you, I want you hitting that front post all the time.
We don't need to go into a massive thing about Saka. We don't need to go into a massive thing about Lovren. I think we know exactly what our strongest back four is if you're being rational. But taking any of the feelings towards players out of it. It's Klein, Matip, Lovren, Milner. That's it. That's just what it is. That is our most solid, dependable
unit. The club doesn't want to start next season with Lovren as first choice. I think that's pretty obvious by the leaks that are in the paper in terms of us getting probably two centre-backs, right? Yeah. So that means Clavin's going to go. It means Lucas is going to go. So we'll end up next year with Lovren as third choice, which I think is fine.
Yeah.
Matip and whoever it's going to be.
This is the other thing, Dave. This is what Liverpool fans can't get their head around. We said it last week. Andy said it as well. Look, Liverpool fans need to cop on, and it's not about third choice.
It's about four good centre-backs.
Exactly.
And whoever plays.
The best performers play. It's not about, because if you're doing shy, I don't want a fella who's getting weeks to prove himself. Two games, you're shit, get out. Or bring in a fella who's just as good as you, or if not better.
Yeah. Listen, it doesn't need to be Lovren drops out and Matip stays in. Whoever is best next season starts the season. And as their form drops, they come out and somebody else comes in. Or if they play brilliantly, they stay in all season. And the other guys don't get a game. Why were we
so shit from the start of January to the end of February when we got knocked out of everything? Tell you why. Because we didn't have enough players.
Yeah.
Klopp's view of the squad was wrong going into this season. He didn't have enough. He might have thought to himself, well, I don't have Europe, so I've got less competitions, I'll be able to manage this going through. But it killed us. The Christmas period killed our momentum for January and February.
He slightly killed us as well with his inability to freshen up the team.
Yeah.
He wanted to play the same 11 every game. Am I too far away? Is that okay? I'm allowed to cut, I think. He wanted to play the same 11.
His microphone's working to bounce.
He wanted to play the same 11 week after week after week. And it got to the point whereby it wasn't week after week. It was 3 day after 3 day.
Yeah.
And that wasn't sustainable.
That's the point. If he has players of equal quality, right? If he has, instead of having 18 players there, he has 25 players there, he can change that team around a lot more.
But it's the same issue that Rodgers had in 2013-14, where we're going into the run. You know, we win 13 or 14 games.
Henderson gets sent off.
Suddenly, you got Lucas playing.
Yeah. And Gerrard.
So suddenly then, you're just one play. And how many times during that run were we looking at the bench going, fucking hell.
If anything happens to anybody here, we're in trouble.
I mean, you got a great 11, but after that...
Look at the bench now.
Yeah.
We're saying the exact same thing again.
Yeah. The difference is we had a full strength squad at the back of 13-14. It's just that our bench was that piss poor.
Yep.
At the moment, it's down to injured players. When we have everybody fully fit, we have a good squad.
Yeah.
What we should be doing, as we keep on saying, and hopefully it will happen, number one, Klopp. This is his first full season. People will say I'm being an apologist for him. I'm not. I'm saying everybody gets a chance to learn. If we have the same problem next Christmas, then he's a fucking idiot.
Yep.
There's no two ways about it. And I love the man as a manager and what he's done for the club. But if he goes into next season whereby we are in the same way stretched across Christmas, then he's a fucking clown.
But I also have a theory about Klopp, which is it takes him two seasons to work out the league. Because if you look at Dortmund, I think it took him four, right?
No.
Yep. No. Or three. He finished runner-up in the third season.
It took him two seasons to figure out.
That's what I mean. All right, two seasons to figure out, third to really optimise it, right? So I think he's learning all the time. He's not a stupid guy.
No.
Right? So now he knows, okay, Christmas is fucking mental, right? Yeah. And we can't.
I thought it was mental, but now I know it's fucking mental. This is incredibly mental.
The first season was just like, whoa. Yeah. Now it's like, holy shit, this doesn't change at all.
Yeah. So first year is, fuck, that's a bit of a fluke. Christmas was kind of mental. It'll probably be better next year. Yeah. Next year, it's like, fuck, it's worse. This is how it goes. And particularly this season, where the way he's playing is so ingrained into the players that they don't really know how to do it at half-mast, or they don't know how to breeze through games. We don't breeze through games.
Nope.
We blow teams away, or we fucking struggle. There's no middle ground. We're either there or we're crap.
Yeah, like for me, what I would probably like to see is maybe three players go this summer.
Yeah.
Maybe four. And what I mean by that is I think Sturridge might go. I think Lucas will probably go. Yeah. I think Clavin could go, and one of our goalkeepers.
I think Origi does as well.
Well, listen, if he does, he does. Origi but stays. I think he stays. I think you'll see him get enough games between now and the end of the season to stick around. But
I think Moreno goes.
Maybe he does. Maybe. But I'm saying, I think four players go. Yeah. We don't need to lose any more than that. What we need to do is keep that core that we have there, upgrade four players, and then all of a sudden, our squad, yet again, has extra depth, extra quality, and we're in a position.
Well, the key to it is not buy squad fitters. Players that go straight into that force team and
they don't need to be 50 million pounds.
I think that's his plan, right? So he's going to buy, okay, the goalkeeper is probably the one contentious thing, whether he goes with Karius again, right? But he's going to buy a centre half that he views as a starter. He's going to buy a left back that he views as a starter. Mm. He's going to buy a midfielder that he views as a starter, and he's going to buy a forward player that he views as a starter. That's the four.
I think
he still signs two more.
Oh, I think he'll sign seven.
I think they'll be young starters in the mold of the idea of a Grujic
or
you know, that type of player where the view is that they'll come through during the season as opposed to necessarily start the season.
That's fine, but they're afterthoughts. They can't be the ones that get announced on July 1st. My point is, he has had, and this is a criticism I've had of Rodgers, of every manager. The best person I saw do it was Jose Mourinho in his second season at Chelsea, and he just said, it's March now. I know what I need. I need fucking Fabregas. I need Costa. And it's the fucking 2nd of July. The deals were done.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, you were looking going, fuck, that's exactly what Chelsea needed. Yeah. And any manager, and it should be the same for Premier League. If we are in a position of strength, if we are the 9th richest club in the world, if we had a negative net spend last year, there's no reason why he doesn't have the funding to do it. It doesn't have to be 450 million pound players, because as we've seen with Pogba, it doesn't necessarily matter.
This is my issue with the whole fucking Van Dijk thing, which is spending 50 million on a fucking centre back.
My thing with the Van Dijk thing is, he's a good defender, but like, he's not this incredibly world class brilliant defender.
He's not Fabio Cannavaro or fucking Paolo Maldini. No. Now, my point is, if Klopp thinks that Van Dijk is the man for him, because fans have decided he's the man for him. Klopp hasn't. But if he does decide, and he has to go and spend 40 million, or he's to give 25 million with Sacco because Southampton are reportedly interested, whatever it might be, fine, if that's what he wants to do. But yeah, he's going home to the fans. He's going home to the fans that love him. But I'm saying, if that's what he has to do, that's what he has to do. But
I agree.
Let him do it. Do you know what I mean? If he wants to spend 4 million quid on a fucking defender, like, everybody's banging on about the Rolls Royce that is Yoel Matip, but he was free.
This is my exact point, and this is why I do have an issue. And I'm, you know me, I'm always the person that says, I don't care about the money, let us spend whatever. We don't need to spend 50 million on a centre back. We don't need to. Look at Matip, right? That he was free. So, and I think that, you know, Andy said, oh, you like to spend 30 million on Rio Ferdinand 15 years ago. Yeah, that's true, right? But that was, in today's money, that's a 90 million.
Yeah, Rio Ferdinand at the time was a player who'd gone to Leeds, and everybody could see was clearly world-class player.
But United were also coming from a point of strength where they were league winners.
Yeah,
they were habitual league winners.
They were perennial league winners.
But, you know, you got Otamendi, you got Mangala. That's true at City, right? You had David Luiz in his first time at Chelsea.
Yeah.
How much did Gary Cahill cost? He was 6 million, right? Or 12 million.
Yeah, he wasn't
like
big money.
Fucking Kurt Zouma's 5 million. You got, I mean, John Stones was 50 million.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
It's a fact that 9 times out of 10, price doesn't necessarily guarantee quality. It doesn't.
Particularly with defenders.
But anyway.
Good scouting with identifying talent is what's important. And I said to you before, I think one of the key attributes of all the players we signed this year has to be not signing a fella from Middlesbrough or Burnley.
Winning mentality.
We have to sign a fella who's used to playing and challenging at the top end of the league and knows what the pressure's like when it comes on. You can definitely bring players through, one or two.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to bring a whole squad full of fellas who are coming from mid-table and you're trying
Champions
to turn them into
regulars.
To be fair to Klopp, right, I think his hit rate in the market is pretty good, right? I don't think, you know, I'm trying to think, who have we signed that under Klopp where you're like, fucking hell, that's a Charlie Adam that is, or that's a fucking love run first season.
I did look at Wijnaldum at the start and say,
look at him now.
This punter isn't
fucking...
Yeah, you were fucking way off on that one. Yeah. For every Markovic, you get a Wijnaldum. Let's be honest, right?
You have to get the trade off somewhere.
Yeah. That has to be balanced.
For every, you know, you and your knee jerks, and you know you've got a 50-50 shot. I don't care what anybody says.
And the best thing is, if it turns out Wijnaldum turns back to shit again.
Yeah, I told you it was shit. It was just
But you know what I've discovered?
It was only a purple patch.
What we all need to realise is when we sign a player, you've got to ask yourself, can Phil make a pun of his name?
Because if Phil can make a pun of the name,
he's written him off.
Yeah, he's instantly
gone. That was it.
Yeah.
You know, the minute Markovic signed, the DMO said he looks like Benny Hill, or he runs like Benny Hill, that was it. Yeah, he could have scored a goal a game. That was
done.
Can't bend his knees.
That's it.
Fairness is seen to affect him.
Yeah. Aquilakovic. Was that what he was
Penny Aquilakovic.
Benny Aquilakovic. But when Adam's been great.
Yeah.
Just on
he's grown into the role.
Grown into the role.
Yeah.
He has definitely grown into the role, and
he's a big game player, I would say.
Definitely, in fairness, and he's a big game home player.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's okay, because if we have to play him 20 times next season in all of the home matches and a couple of, say we play him 24 times next season, he plays all the home games and he plays fucking six away matches against top six rivals.
Gets his bonus.
And he doesn't play the rest. He plays Europe over and in Europe. Happy days. That's okay.
The thing is, though, I don't mind if he's doing really well, because I know it'll just piss me off that he's doing well, but like it'll piss me off in a way that I'm delighted we're winning.
Yeah. He's Fernandinho. He's not going to play every game.
Yeah.
But the other thing about him is, and it's your point, you know, United have Park there, and we're looking at, look at all the quality around Park. Yeah. And then, but all the time, big games, the whole
he
lot.
He was a player that came that in and did a job in. For
well,
that.
Well, Ferguson just came out and said his biggest mistake in the last 10 years of his career or something was not playing Park in the Champions League final. Mm. He said, because he'd been instrumental getting him to there, and then he dropped him, and he didn't name him in the squad. And he was like, that's the worst thing I did, was not play him. So there we go. Yeah. Come in. I've quoted Ferguson twice in this spot.
No, listen, you know what?
Welcome to the Manchester United trippers.
It is, but
I think we'd have more fun doing that.
You can't take away from the fact that the man was the best manager of the last 20 years. So you have to, listen, people who are really bitter will say, no, fuck him, I will always hate him. But you know what? I don't anymore. I honestly don't. I never look back on him.
I never hated him because I wanted Amas to be as good.
Yeah.
I hated him
because he was so successful.
Now you look at it and you say, right, well, what was he good at? I'm not talking about tactics and stuff like that, but the way he managed the club, the way he was ruthless in his management, the way he always evolved and changed his mind. That was the secret of his longevity. Even when he couldn't do the coaching, he brought in somebody.
I was thinking about it there the other day about how he, wasn't it Brian Kidd he booted Brian Kidd took the Blackburn job and immediately he goes, Jim Smith has fucking Steve McLaren, a young lad doing lots of modern things at Derby. Yeah. He goes in and says, I like the look of you. Yeah, you're coming to Man United now.
You know,
and it was
funny,
always
right?
a draw.
Compare it to like, not to be, but compare it to Rodgers when he replaces his backroom staff. Right?
Yeah.
So Ferguson, you know, in that situation after McLaren goes, he goes, right, I need something completely fucking different now. Goes to Portugal, gets Queiroz, brings him in. Apparently he was like the best fucking coach ever. Then Queiroz goes and he goes and gets Mühlenstein, and he's like this Dutch guy who's, so Rodgers goes and gets like O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
And McAllister. And it's like, and even Pep Linders, who is probably the bright one there, was forced on him
by the club.
So, you know, it's little things that's leadership is about going, I know what I can't do anymore.
Yeah.
I know what I'm not good at.
You know what you have to take into account there as well? Ferguson was much older at the point when he was doing that than Rodgers. Rodgers may have felt a little bit threatened by people coming in with new novel ideas. So that's a natural human instinct in a lot of people.
But I'm surprised Rodgers didn't go the other way and said, okay, I'm going to bring in an older person.
Yeah,
I'm
someone really experienced. Bobby Robson to his Stan Staunton.
Exactly, yeah.
Poor old Bobby.
A Ranić or somebody from like a big name coach who'd stepped out of wanting to be a first team manager.
Yeah. Who does kind of the most strategic, the oversight. Yeah. Because Rodgers likes
his great
coach.
As a coach.
So listen, we're getting towards the end of the season. Here's a question, right? Where do you target for players? Like, and this is an ongoing
thing I want to close up on the match coming up, and it sort of comes into this, right?
Yeah.
Klein has had a little bit of a drop off in form, definitely since Christmas, right?
Yeah.
And we have Terence Trent Alexander on the bench.
Yeah. Sign my name, cross my heart.
Yeah. And he is absolutely ripping shit up every time he plays. And in fairness, when he's come into the first team, he's been excellent. Is there an argument now at this stage to start giving him a few games, and even at the expense of moving Milner out of the left back position, playing Klein at left back and playing Alexander down the right wing?
No. In my opinion, no. No, for me, Milner stays in at left full, Klein stays at right full, and you don't fuck around with it. Because we're at a point in the season whereby two things can happen. That young lad can get butchered in a game, his confidence is shot to pieces, and we, at a crucial point, slip behind our rivals. And all of a sudden, not only is it us having fucked up and maybe missing out on top four, but also it's people pinning the blame on him. And it becomes very hard to come back, especially with our fan base, because they are so partisan. It becomes very difficult to come back from that, in my opinion. That's the way I would feel about it. So I'm cool about giving him game time, but I wouldn't be putting him in to take Klein out for no reason.
So I agree with Steve-O, but for different reasons, I guess. So I agree that I wouldn't make the change and I wouldn't play him at right back. And my reason is I don't think he's a very good right back. I think he's a better midfielder than he is a right back. And I think his future, if you watch him for the under-23s and where he plays in the middle. And he's got two good feet. He's a great passer. He's got great engine energy. I don't think he's got the concentration or the physicality to play in defence yet. He might go on to develop to be a very good right back. But right now, I mean, he's too small, I think, to play in our defence right now, because we expect our fullbacks to do so much in the game. I think his future is a midfielder. I'd like to see him get game time, but I'd be bringing him on instead of Lucas into the middle of the park rather than put him at right back. Now, I'm sure loads of people are going to disagree with me, but I don't see him as a fullback.
Well,
right
I don't think he's been as great as people have said he has. I was going to agree with you there.
And I think Klein has been better.
I think there's been a rose. Think. Yeah, I think there's been a rose-tinted view because he's a kid and he's coming through the academy and everybody wants that next kid to come through.
It's like Ryan McLaughlin, right?
Yeah.
Everyone said Ryan McLaughlin was the next big thing and how doesn't he get a game and blah, 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 blah. And where is he now? He's at fucking Tranmere, is it? Or
I don't know where he is. Yeah.
So
that can happen. That can happen. That's
I think he's a talent. I think because he's come in and played right back for us, people go, well, he's a right back. And I don't think he is a right back. I think he doesn't play there as regularly as people think for the lower league team, for the junior teams. And he's such a talent that I think if you put him in a fullback when he's not physically ready for it, it could destroy him. It could actually
I don't think that's the move to make. Lots of people do, Phil. Lots of people agree with you, but I think we keep
that's
our back
asked.
Four. No, absolutely. But I think we keep
it's
our
not
back
my point.
Four.
It used to be that you'd blood like a young centre half at right back, right? Mm. So if you think about, you know, it's where we played Wisdom, it's where we play Carragher,
Gomez,
Henshaw, whatever, right? You know, you bring him in, you give him a go at fullback. But those days are gone, particularly in the Klopp system, where you're probably going to have the ball so much, right? You're the outlet for so much of the play. I wouldn't play him there.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
Sorry, I was asking about transfers, and I was saying, you know, for me, our focus, and I'm going back to the fact that, you know, we are the ninth richest club in the world, whatever it might be. For me, our focus should be on the players that can't quite get into the elite level teams. Mm. So if you see it all the time. A player signs for Sevilla or they sign for, you know, whoever it might be, you know, from a player that can't get into the Real Madrid team, a player that can't get into the Barcelona team or the Atletico team. Same with in Italy, players that drop down from Juve end up at Roma, end up at fucking Napoli or wherever it might be. We have to be going to the Romas, to the Napolis now and saying, we're taking your player and be actually ballsy about it. Not this is, I think, one of our biggest problems. I think our recruitment team don't believe in themselves anymore, and there's no money in Italy apart from Juventus probably that are able to compete with what we can offer. So why aren't we going and attracting those players out of there? Mm. They're really tough. Yes, Juve are always going to get the pick of the team. I know, but listen, you know what? 2 years they have to be looking at it and saying, I haven't got my move to Juve yet. Okay, well I go to the Premiership. And I do well there. I'm going to Bayern, Barcelona, Real Madrid, or Juve. No, fuck City. Fucking Kip. But, you know, what I'm saying is that is the fact. They don't need to go to City for money from
us. They've a commuter playing back and forth to Milan every day.
Yeah, fair enough. But I'm just saying, this is the way. Okay, well, you know what? Fucking go to Germany then and take the best players that play Champions League football there that aren't with Dortmund and aren't with...
But isn't that what it looks a bit like now? Like, we're talking about going and getting Dirk Brandt. And the
see, he's fucked before he even comes in. If he does come in,
Julian Kite, he is though. He's as ugly as him. The works. He looks a bit chunkier than him though. I have
he
to say,
like
the one thing
he's
I turned on,
diet,
I turned on the Dutch football there the other day, and I thought it was like, you know, a match from 2012 or something like that. And because Kelt's playing on the right wing. Turns out it was a live match.
And fucking Brad Jones in goal.
Brad Jones is in goal. I was like, what's going on?
Hang on a minute. I've seen these guys before.
Brad Jones?
But yeah. But no, like there's lots and lots of quality out there. And you just have, listen, we just have to sit back, chill out and hope that our fucking recruitment team can do it.
Doing a good
job.
They
haven't let us down a huge amount, but they haven't had long enough to do a great job. So if you look at what we signed last summer, it's turned out pretty fucking good. You know, not, they didn't spend a huge amount of money, so Clavin was always going to be just a stopgap.
Yeah.
You know, no, did they sign Clavin before the Sacco thing?
No, it was around about the same time.
I think he knew Sacco was probably going to go.
Yeah, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't know. But I'm just saying that, yeah. I'm just saying that maybe he was signed before that. But anyway.
I think the real car, and Paul has said it before on this, I think the core thing was there, that the Sacco thing wasn't planned for. Clavin was going to come in anyway as the fourth choice.
That's what I'm saying. Sorry, that's what I was getting at. The fact that Clavin was just brought in as a backup. You know what I mean? He was just there to play some games.
Because he brought Calgary in last year in January.
Yeah, he was just there for that. And unfortunately, shit happened that it didn't work out. You just have to hope that this summer we don't have as many outcomes. We don't have any major fucking traumas or any major drama, whatever you want to call it. And we can just add fucking four quality players to what
we
have.
Do we fear Lukaku at the weekend?
Yeah, of course you should.
Yeah.
Of course
he should. He's the best striker in the league.
But he's the only striker, the only club he seems to score.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with him there, but...
No, but he's the only club... the only top six club...
Who would I fear more?
Yeah.
Sanchez, probably Costa as well.
I mean, we've played Arsenal. Sanchez didn't do too much.
He came on and caused the goal immediately.
But I think Lukaku... Okay.
In terms of style,
what I mean is, it's a subjective debate, but there's not much to choose.
No. He's one of the best strikers in the Premiership.
I think he's phenomenal.
Like, I think
Harry Kane is probably.
Well, no, but I think that his attributes are exactly the type of attributes that air defence tends to struggle with. He's very quick. He's very powerful.
And then he'll be shit.
And then he'll be shit.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there's lots of Everton fans out there who give out shit about him because he's very ineffective for large parts and then burst into life.
But this is the storage argument where we were giving out that he used to do fuck all on the pitch and then he'd score nearly a goal a game and we were saying, well, look, as long as he's scoring a goal a game, none of us give a shite. And
he stopped scoring a goal a game. If you put Lukaku, let's say, into Arsenal's team, they win the league.
No, I know what you're saying by that. Yeah,
I still think they'll
have a fatal flaw somewhere.
Yeah, they'll still fuck up and have.
I don't understand why Arsenal didn't buy him.
Lukaku was swapped for Giroud. I know what you're saying,
I can see, like, Wenger is essentially Moff Tarkin on the Death Star. No matter what he does, he's going to leave a fatal flaw somewhere in that Death Star. Right? Like, that's basically everything that's going on.
Well, we're not just fence this up. No, it's not. It's fine.
I like it airy.
Will we take it out of the plans though, so that nobody can? No. Fuck, who's going to see the plans?
Who's
going to
see the plans?
I want to see the whole thing.
Yeah. Hopefully, then whoever comes in as Wenger's replacement is like the First Order replacement as well.
Yeah.
We've built a planet-sized version of it. Brilliant. You definitely left out the vents and the
lads. I've just had a look at those plans, and there's no fatal flaw in them. Can somebody put a fatal flaw in this?
And why were the plans kept after it had been built?
Well, plans are always kept after stuff is built,
in case you have to fix it.
Why?
Or rebuild it because somebody's got in.
If you're good enough to build a fucking floating Death Star, surely you can hide the plans or work off like.
Yeah, they could have just encrypted them. Let's be honest.
Nonsense.
Some simple four-letter password would have done it.
Yeah.
Just not leave them on the desk.
Plus, it's caught. You know, the.
Where do I put these plans? Don't worry. Just leave them there.
Just put them over there in a folder called plans.
And why are they? Why is it a
confidential?
Weapon? It's a secret
clean
weapon
desk policy
that they've called the Death Star. It's not much. Somebody's secret, is it?
No. I think the rebels caused it.
It's called the Death Star. What's that? No, we were going to call it the awnings.
But, but that was put a planet taken down the road and just called themselves that.
So we called it Excalibur Cottage, but someone else had that as well. So we came up with Death Star. But yeah, don't
we checked the registry. No one else had that.
No one else had Death Star.
No.
It's not really a star either. It's a moon.
Yeah.
It's a moon. We thought that would throw you off.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's another moon in the sky. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, the Death Moon just didn't have a ring to it.
So basically, Arsene Wenger is part of the Empire.
Basically.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like he could be a Star Wars.
He could. Then. You could put the uniform on him with the whole lot. Yeah.
He could do it.
Yeah.
He looked fairly well on him. football and Liverpool and Everton. So do we win?
Yeah. 2-1. It'll be horrible.
You, Dave?
8-0.
Thanks, Phil.
real Phil shout. We lose 11-2.
I reckon it's a draw. Okay, so as ever, look, big thanks to the lads at the Astro Park for letting us use the facilities here. As ever, Dale and the whole lot, good lads, and they always look after us really well up here. You know where to find us at this stage. We're on Twitter. The links will be out at some stage tomorrow. I don't know even what I'm going to call this because I can't remember half the stuff that's gone on. The lads in Taw, as far as I know, are up for British Podcast Awards. So if you log on there, that BritishPodcastAwards.com/vote and stick in the Anfield Wrap, do so, because look, let's be honest about it, they are the best British podcast that's out there. Obviously we're not British because we're European. Apart from that, we are definitely the best European one. So anyway, until next week, that's a wrap for tonight. And God knows what we come back. Hopefully we come back with a derby win. And then we look forward to the run into the end of the season, which hopefully leads us into Champions League football, and maybe Champions League football will be enough to keep us going for another season. But in the meantime, good night. God bless. Talk to us next week. Down to recruitment as well. If what we don't know and what nobody really knows is what level of input Klopp has had into transfers in Dortmund.
Yeah.
Right?
We don't know.
There's always been this thing, oh, Zorc did all the transfers in Dortmund. Yeah. Yet when he came in, he brought in your man, what's his name? Buvac and the other guy. What's your back?
Peter, isn't
it? Peter.
Is it Buvac and Jenko? Jenko.
In love. Peter in love. Peter in love brought him in. And he's Klopp's right hand man when it comes to skill.
Yeah.
Right? So fundamentally, we are now resting our hopes on Michael Edwards. And
who is the Trev of scouts. He actually doesn't exist.
Yeah. Michael Edwards is dead.
He's dead.
And if we ever talk to Trev again tonight,
it wouldn't surprise me if FSG were like, you know, they're fucking always moaning about a director of football. Let's just make one up. Let's call him. What should we call him? Well, what's your name? Your name's Mike. What's your name, Ed? Ed. Michael Edwards. There we go.
Michael
Search on
Getty
Images for, you know,
generic
guy.
Then Ray, can you Photoshop bland generic
because
guy?
Nobody's ever seen him before. No. Nobody'd ever seen a picture.
It's like
of
Joe
him
Gomez.
Ever.
Yeah. Joe Gomez, we assume, is this fella that played three games.
I have never seen him. Well, if he still exists.
Four games.
Disappeared now, wasn't he?
He's disappeared.